Apple's EU announcement generated 212 points and 302 comments, which is a notably high comment count relative to its score, a signal that the topic provoked strong opinions even among people who didn't necessarily upvote the story. The announcement is about further changes Apple is making to its App Store policies for European Union markets, in compliance with the Digital Markets Act.
The Digital Markets Act compelled Apple to allow third-party app stores and sideloading on iOS within the EU. What Apple has been doing since those requirements took effect is implementing compliance in ways that the European Commission has repeatedly described as technically compliant, but not in the spirit of the regulation. The new announcement includes additional API access and interoperability requirements. But the HN comment thread was deeply skeptical about whether Apple is actually opening its platform in meaningful ways or engineering technically compliant but practically limiting solutions.
The core technology fee that Apple proposed, charging developers a small amount per install beyond a threshold, was cited repeatedly as an example of this dynamic. It technically complies with the letter of the regulation while making the economics of third-party distribution unattractive for many developers. Whether the European Commission accepts the new announcements as genuine compliance or escalates enforcement is a story worth watching, because the DMA has real teeth, including fines of up to 10% of global annual turnover for non-compliance.
And then the men with guns tell you to do it anyway post. 332 points, 224 comments, is a fascinating adjacent piece. The title refers to the implicit coercive power behind legal systems, and the essay explores the philosophical and practical tension between technical systems that can resist legal compulsion, end-to-end encryption, decentralized protocols, and the state's ultimate ability to demand compliance through force. It's a post that would have fit naturally in 2013, but it's landing in 2026 inches a specific context. Multiple governments have been pursuing legal mechanisms to compel platform decryption or key escrow.
The thread was predictably lively. The libertarian and cypherpunk corners of HN pushed back hard on the framing, arguing that sufficiently decentralized systems genuinely do escape state coercion, not as a philosophical matter but as a technical one. The more pragmatic commenters argued that most users and most companies aren't willing to operate on genuinely ungovernable infrastructure. So the question is less about theoretical limits and more about where the practical equilibrium settles.
The Being Ambitious and Being a Dad essay is 558 points, 371 comments, which makes it the second highest engagement story in terms of comment volume today. Nicolas Cherrier's personal essay about trying to maintain professional ambition while being a present father touched a nerve in a community that skews toward people in exactly that life stage. The essay is honest about the trade-offs in a way that avoids both martyrdom and toxic positivity resolution. The HN comment thread became one of those rare discussions where people shared genuinely personal experience without it devolving into advice-giving competition.
The Finger Protocol piece, 228 points, 70 comments, is a wonderful bit of internet archaeology. Finger was a Unix protocol from 1971 that let you query information about a user on a remote system, essentially a social profile that predated the web by 20 years. The essay argues convincingly that Finger never actually died. There are still Finger servers running, still being maintained, still being used by a small but persistent community. It's a case study in how technically simple, decentralized protocols can outlast the entire commercial web boom that was supposed to make them obsolete.
The IKEA naming system story, 364 points, 254 comments, is pure HN catnip. IKEA names its products according to a taxonomy that's been consistent since the founding. Beds are named after Norwegian places, sofas get Swedish town names, bathroom products get Scandinavian lakes and rivers, outdoor furniture gets Swedish islands. The taxonomy is apparently maintained with genuine rigor. The comment thread turned into a wonderful exercise in people testing edge cases and finding exceptions, then debating whether the exceptions invalidate the system or are themselves taxonomically coherent.
The sleep piece from Nautilus, 77 points, 60 comments, covers research on how modern sleep patterns diverge from what appears to be the evolutionary baseline. The core finding is that the dominant model of consolidating sleep into a single eight-hour block appears to be a relatively recent cultural norm, not a biological optimum. Evidence from pre-industrial societies and some non-industrial contemporary societies suggests biphasic sleep, a longer night block with a shorter midday rest, is more natural. The HN comment thread had the expected debates about cultural versus biological causation, but the research basis was considered solid.
And the activation energy essay, 19 points, 2 comments, is a short but well-received piece arguing that the concept of activation energy from chemistry is a useful mental model for human behavior. Just as a chemical reaction requires an initial energy input to proceed even if it's thermodynamically favorable, many productive behaviors, exercise, writing, difficult conversations, require an activation energy cost that people often avoid even when the downstream outcome would be positive. The implication is that reducing activation energy through environmental design is often more effective than trying to summon willpower.
Now, Sarah, this is the point in the show where I want us to be honest about something we've been fairly confident about and ask whether that confidence is warranted. The strongest consensus claim we've been pushing across multiple episodes is that specialized AI inference hardware, companies like Cerebras, Grok, Samba Nova, represents a durable competitive moat against NVIDIA's general-purpose GPU dominance. The Cerebras CS4 story today is a good occasion to stress test that.
The bull case we've been making is that inference is a different workload than training. It requires different memory bandwidth profiles, different latency characteristics, and that wafer scale or other specialized architectures are better suited to it, meaning NVIDIA's training dominance doesn't automatically translate to inference dominance. I still think that's a reasonable hypothesis.
Here's the counterargument I want to take seriously. NVIDIA's moat isn't really the hardware, it's CUDA. CUDA is 20 years old. It has an ecosystem of optimized libraries, kubla's, kudnn, flash attention implementations that represent enormous accumulated engineering effort. When a new model architecture comes out, the NVIDIA ecosystem gets optimized kernels for it within weeks because thousands of engineers are already fluent in CUDA. Cerebras and Grok have to maintain their own compiler stacks and libraries, and they're doing it with significantly smaller engineering teams.
That's the key assumption to examine. The specialized hardware advocates assume that software ecosystem gaps can be closed if the hardware performance advantage is large enough. But what if the performance advantage is only meaningful for a subset of workloads, and for the rest, the friction of leaving the CUDA ecosystem exceeds the benefit? Several Cerebras customers have reportedly found that running certain transformer architectures on CS series hardware requires model modifications because the architecture is optimized for dense computation and some attention patterns don't map cleanly.
So what would we need to see to know we're wrong? Concretely, if in 18 months the major hyperscalers, Microsoft, Google, Amazon Web Services, are not publicly announcing significant Cerebras deployments for production inference workloads, that's a meaningful signal that the CUDA lock-in is stronger than the hardware differentiation. Google has the advantage of designing their own TPUs within their own software stack, which is a different path entirely. But for third-party specialized inference hardware to win, it needs hyperscaler validation at scale, not just benchmark sheets.
The Vietnam Tang Dynasty shipwreck and the Binh Chao wreck archaeology, 43 points, 3 comments, is one I don't want to skip just because it landed quietly. It covers a late Tang period, 9th century CE, shipwreck off the Vietnamese coast that contained enormous quantities of Chinese trade ceramics. The significance is that it provides material evidence for the scale and sophistication of the Tang Dynasty maritime trade network, which historians have inferred from documentary sources but rarely had direct physical corroboration for. One wreck's cargo apparently contained tens of thousands of pieces, suggesting commercial-scale trade at a volume that challenges older assumptions about the limits of pre-modern maritime commerce.